In the rain-soaked Oregon coastal range, the Stamper House stands as a monument to defiance. Unlike every other structure that respectfully retreats from the Wakanda-Aga River's hungry waters, this two-story home juts defiantly into the current, reinforced with logs, cables, and cement bags, a physical manifestation of the family motto painted above their door, "Never give a inch." This defiance extends beyond architecture to the novel central conflict. While the entire logging community of Wakanda has gone on strike against the powerful Wakanda Pacific Company, the Stampers continue operating their independent logging business, honoring their contract rather than joining the union walkout. The town's hatred culminates in the novel's opening image, a severed arm hanging from the Stamper House, middle finger extended toward the gathered union man across the river, a gesture that encapsulates the Stamper's brutal individualism that refuses to bend to community pressure. The Stamper family represents a quintessentially American archetype, rugged individualists who value personal freedom above all else. Henry Stamper, the 80-year-old patriarch, rules with tyrannical determination, having shaped his son Hank through brutal lessons in self-reliance. Hank embodies physical prowess and unwavering determination, making him both admired and resented by townspeople. When Hank fights in the town bar, he displays not technique, but pure animal determination, a raw force that succeeds through sheer willpower but leaves psychological wreckage. The Stamper's history reveals generations of stringy-muscled, stubborn Westwalkers perpetually moving across America with itchy feet, always believing in greener grass over the hill. Having reached the Pacific, the literal end of the westward journey, they've finally been forced to make their stand rather than continue running. Yet Kesey doesn't present this as simple heroism. Their stance threatens not just themselves, but the economic survival of the entire town. 12 years before the novel's main action, Hank's stepmother took her son Leland east to pursue education and escape the rough logging life. Now, Lee returns after receiving a postcard saying Henry has been injured, with Hank's handwritten addition, "You should be a big enough guy now, bub." Lee arrives as a pale intellectual contrast to the physically powerful Hank, representing the classic American divide between mind and body, east and west, contemplation and action. But Lee harbors a dark motivation. As a teenager, he discovered his mother and Hank engaged in a sexual relationship, a betrayal that has festered for years. He returns not to help, but to exact revenge by seducing Hank's wife, Viv. As Lee gradually becomes drawn into the physical work of logging, he finds his determination for revenge complicated by unexpected feelings of belonging. The intellectual who once disdained manual labor discovers a strange satisfaction in physical challenges, while his plan to seduce Viv evolves from cold calculation to genuine attraction. What truly distinguishes sometimes a great notion is its revolutionary narrative technique. Kesey employs a constantly shifting point of view that moves not only between characters, but sometimes within a single paragraph or sentence. Without warning, the perspective can slide from Hank's thoughts to Lee's, creating a kaleidoscopic effect that captures the interconnectedness of the community and landscape. This technique creates a dense tapestry of consciousness that mirrors the tangled relationships of the Oregon logging community. But Kesey doesn't stop with human perspectives. The narrative occasionally inhabits the consciousness of Molly the dog, or follows the sensations of a salmon swimming upstream, its ancient instincts pushing against the current, just as the Stampers push against social pressure. Even the landscape becomes a character. The ever-present rain, the hungry river, the towering trees standing as silent witnesses to human struggle. This creates a sense that individual human concerns are just one part of a larger natural cycle, undermining the Stamper's belief in their own primacy. The Oregon landscape Kesey depicts is not a pastoral ideal, but a primal, threatening force that shapes human character through constant resistance. The endless rain, dangerous river, and dense forests create an environment where survival requires perpetual vigilance. Unlike Midwestern farmland where crops depend on human care, Oregon's wilderness flourishes with complete disregard for man and his aims. Jonas Stamper, Henry's father, founded a place saturated with moist and terrible dying, despite its bounty, so overwhelming that he eventually abandoned his family. His son Henry responded by becoming harder, developing the berry vine toughness the wilderness demanded. The novel's central metaphor is the river, constantly changing, powerful, indifferent to human desires. For Hank, this battle began in childhood when he built a cage for three bobcat kittens he'd rescued, only to have the river rise overnight and drown them. This loss created a lifelong grudge match between Hank and the river. He understands it wants its fair advantage and sees it as an enemy that has taken things from him and threatens to take more. While the Stamper men dominate the narrative, Kinsey gives remarkable depth to his female characters, particularly Viv Stamper. Initially appearing as a potential prize between brothers, Viv emerges as the novel's moral center, the character most capable of honest self-reflection. Trapped in a distant marriage to Hank, she's drawn to Lee's intellectual interests and emotional availability. Their connection represents a meeting of minds that Viv has long been denied, revealed through late-night discussions ranging from Greek mythology to modern poetry. Yet her loyalty to Hank remains strong, rooted in their history and her understanding of his complexity beneath his hardened exterior. When Lee asks her to leave with him, she's torn between different versions of herself. The novel's final image of Viv taking Lee's bus ticket but leaving alone, telling a child passenger simply, "I'm just going," suggests her rejection of destructive masculine competition. By choosing neither brother, Viv claims her independence in a world designed to deny it. Sometimes a great notion confronts the sustainability of America's foundational myths, particularly endless westward expansion and unlimited natural resources. The Stamper family embodies this national narrative of perpetual movement until reaching the Pacific Ocean, the literal end of the westward journey. This forces a reckoning with how to live when you can no longer outrun problems by moving west. The Stamper's defiance against the river, union, and nature represents a refusal to accept this limitation, though the novel suggests such defiance cannot last indefinitely. Henry Stamper's morphine-induced hallucinations reveal a life defined by conquest and competition, a quintessentially American story reaching its end. The novel's ambiguous conclusion, with Hank and Lee joining forces for one final log run while Viv leaves town, offers no simple resolution, but hints at both possible integration and the need for new paths. What makes us truly free? Is it standing alone against opposition or recognizing our interdependence? Kesey suggests America's maturation requires moving beyond adolescent beliefs in unlimited expansion toward a more sustainable relationship with community and nature. Perhaps true freedom isn't found in never giving an inch, but in recognizing when to bend without breaking.